Students focus on what they were told, not paying attention to the situation.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope.
So they're not going to see anything new because they're so busy trying to copy what you told them.
From the campus of Stanford University.
Welcome to Schools In. I'm Denise Pope, senior lecturer with the Graduate School of Education here at Stanford University, and I am with my co-host, Dan Schwartz, dean of the Graduate School of Education.
So when people ask me what I do as dean, I say my job is to serve.
That's very philanthropic of you.
No, it's to serve and to be patient.
Okay.
Those are the two things.
Those are good.
Neither of those am I good at.
No, that's good. That's a good answer.
But the question is, am I learning while I serve? So what is service learning?
Service learning is this concept. It's been around for a while. But if you think of the two words, right, it is using the act of service to help you learn something. So I teach a class here at Stanford in the School of Education called Curriculum Construction. And in that class, people who are studying to be teachers or administrators or policy people, doesn't matter, they all design curricula. And I could make it just a class where everybody just designs their own curricula and I grade it. But instead, I've decided to make it a service learning course, which is actually designation here at Stanford, where they are learning about curriculum design by actually using curriculum as a service for others. So they go into the Red Cross and the Red Cross says, gosh, we actually need a better curriculum for training our volunteers. So my students would take that task on of designing curriculum. So the reason it's a win-win is because, well, one, the Red Cross gets their curriculum that they truly need, but two, my students actually learn better because it's a real-world task. If they're just designing a third-grade curriculum about dinosaurs that they don't really care about, they're not going to maybe be as motivated. They're not going to actually learn the complexity of working and implementing curriculum in a real site, designing curriculum for a real site. So service learning is supposed to be a win-win on both the side of those who are served, you work with, and also the learners.
So when I was faculty at Vanderbilt, they had a large service learning program. And they came to me. They wanted to see if it works.
If service learning works.
Yeah. And I'm not sure why. It seems pretty powerful to me. But regardless, they asked me how to measure the learning from service learning, right? And I guess, I don't, you know, so they could justify it to the university. So it's challenging because everybody has a different experience,
yes.
Right? You're not in the classroom. You're all getting the same thing. You're out in the field. So how did I show that service learning improved learning?
Huh. You probably didn't just ask the students themselves. Well, you probably did ask the students.
No, I never asked.
No, you never asked anybody what they think. I have no idea, Dan. What did you do?
So I took the content in the service learning, you know, the sort of theoretical content that they were supposed to get, say curriculum construction.
Okay.
And I had half the students do service learning and half the students just did sort of standard stuff. And then I taught both of them the content, like curriculum construction.
Nice.
And I saw who learned the curriculum construction better. And so the ones who had the service learning, they had encountered the problem, some of the issues, so that when I explained the theory behind it, it made sense to them. So they learned it much better. So the way I measure the value of a lot of things, these experiences that are tough, they're not particularly verbal, these experiences, so they're hard to measure.
Right.
But they prepare you to learn the next thing.
Right.
And so that's how I pulled it off.
Well, and what I have found in my class is with curriculum construction especially, it looks really easy to design curriculum from an outside point of view. But when you're in there with the site, so I had these kids designing a middle school human biology curriculum, and they wanted to get the kids really excited and learn what you are, what you eat kind of thing. And they wanted to give kids Red Bull and caffeine and candy and show them that they felt really crappy. And I was like, oh, why don't you go present that to the site and see what they say about that. And they're like, oh, this is harder than it looks. You have to get people to agree with you and do what's right for kids. So we are really lucky to have an expert with us here, the expert here at Stanford. Tom Schnabel is the executive director of the Haas Center for Public Service at Stanford. He spent more than two decades working on and developing all different community engagement initiatives in education at both K-12 and at the university level. And in particular, here at the Haas Center for for Public Service. We're going to talk today about sort of why college and high schools focus on this. Why, you know, we have a special initiative here at Stanford called the Cardinal. My course is called a Cardinal Course. You get a service denotation on your transcript when you take this. So welcome. Welcome.
Welcome.
Well,
welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So here's a question for you. Why is service important? Why did Stanford even take this on? Why are lots of universities taking this on? What is the big deal? Is it just that you learn better?
Well, that's part of it. To your point about how do you know whether there's learning happening, I wouldn't actually say anything differently about – you should be looking at how do people learn things regardless of how you teach, whether you're using this experiential learning pedagogy that has a service bend to it, or you're teaching people from a lecture, you're still going to be looking at making sure that they understand the content. So I think part of why we do service is, I think about what David Labory said about the three goals and sometimes competing goals of education. There's a social mobility, there's a social efficiency, but there's also this idea of teaching to democratic equality. And that institutions have – all education institutions should have some pieces of that built in. Very often what we find is the social mobility or the social efficiency pieces to say, hey, this is how you get a job. Those things often very much win out. I think where service learning and service, the reason we do this in educational settings is to make sure that we don't forget about that democratic equality part of the fundamentals around especially public education in America.
So I'm a mom, and I know at my kids' school, they have community service hour obligations. So in order to graduate, you have to do whatever it is, 50 or 100 hours of community service. How is that – first of all, is that good? I mean, is it good to force people to do service for graduation? Do you kind of lose something in the translation when you're being forced to go help the homeless person? But what are your thoughts on that versus this idea of service learning and in the classroom?
Right. I'm going to say something that's not going to sound like I'm the director of the Center for Public Service, but I actually kind of hate the word service. It's a really inescapable word, and it's actually really complicated, right? I mean, you said it, like, are we forcing people to do service? Do I think that's a good idea? It can be. I don't want to hedge it, but I think the requirement part of it is actually really difficult because one of the interesting pieces of data is the number of people who volunteer, the amount of volunteering that happens, the biggest drop happens between 12th grade and freshman year in college. And one of the sort of cynical kind of things I think is that so many people are required to do it either because they think that's going to get them into college or there's something that they have – a box that they'll have to check in high school that when they get the freedom, they get into college, they say, well, I'm not going to do it. Now, there's other things that are going on there. They're acclimating to a whole new environment. They're figuring themselves out. But I think we got to be really careful when we require it. The other thing that I like to remind people that when we require something like service in a school setting, whether it's in K-12 or in college or university, if we don't have the requisite sort of supports around it, what happens is that sends a flood of people out into communities where the community partners are like, I don't know what to do with you. I actually used to work in Mississippi in Tougaloo College, which is a really wonderful HBCU in Jackson, Mississippi, was one of the first to actually have this requirement. And the woman who ran the United Way Agency of Greater Jackson Area, I can remember having this conversation with her. She was a Tougaloo alum, saying one of the things that she didn't like about Tougaloo was the service requirement. Because what happened was most of the, you know, seniors of Tougaloo would go out and probably the last 2 weeks of their time saying, hey, I need to help. Could you have any stamps that I can lick or food that I can serve? And that's a good experience, but it would be a much better experience if it were something that were much more integrative into the learning. And that gets us back to what service learning is. It's not service as a standalone thing. It's actually fundamentally integrated into the course. Like both of you were talking about your curriculum construction. There's all kinds of ways you can do this outside of even education courses. There's engineering courses where people are learning mechanical engineering by building assistive technologies for people who have mobility problems. It's completing the learning cycle, right? We know how people learn. It's not just from abstract conceptualization about problems. It's really about figuring out, I'm going to actually have an experience and then reflect on that and come back to the abstract conceptualization. So that's one of the ways that I think service is different than service learning.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We're talking with Tom Schnabelt, who's the executive director of the Haas Center for Public Service here at Stanford University.
So service learning, it turns out it is the gateway drug to the School of Education. Students, undergraduates, do service learning, and for some reason from there, they become very interested in education. Mm. So this is, it is like, I'm trying to understand that phenomenon. Is it that they've suddenly discovered that there are people whom they can help, and they're now looking for opportunities to do that, whereas before everybody was trying to help them to get into college? And now, do you have any insight on why that we get this pathway from service learning into the School of Education?
Well, I do know that the number one sort of public issue that college students are interested in is educational equity and equality. Mm. So, the people, when they come through the Haas Center's door, the most commonly asked, when we say, hey, what issue really inspires you? Oh, I really want to be involved in helping others. It's sort of the pay it forward thing. Somebody mentored me in school, and I want to do that. So I would imagine that what's happening is when they're having those experiences in your courses, they're seeing for themselves this is a path that I could see as a potential career in front of me. And, I'm an educator, so I'm very suspicious of overly instrumental sort of thinking about education as just career. But I have to acknowledge that these experiences often tell people or show people, this is a career trajectory for me or it isn't. I mean, I know you both know this. A lot of the schools that do student teaching towards the end of their experience, the students get into the classroom and suddenly discover, oh, God, I don't really like little kids.
This is not for me.
Maybe I shouldn't be a teacher. So that's why I think and it can have obviously have the opposite effect of I didn't like little kids, but when I got into the classroom, I realized I'm a natural teacher. So I think that may be part of why that happens in the School of Education.
I'm wondering, though, so if you think now about K-12 and the classroom, I have had people say to me, I do learning by doing. I just don't do the service part. So, we do lots of experiments or we do lots of labs or Brooke Donald, our communications director, was talking about for a weekend she had to actually – when she was studying homelessness, she had to be homeless for a weekend.
Wow.
That, to me
– how'd that go?
Well, I think she was really scared, but she definitely learned a lot.
I bet.
I'm not saying these are bad. I just want to compare them to service. So that's different from working with the homeless, right? Let's simulate homelessness.
Yeah, is it better to try and help people or to be in their shoes?
There's a sort of spectrum of activities that people can be involved with as part of service learning. And again, it goes back to that kind of contested nature of should we be using the term service? Very often, I would rather say community-engaged learning. So it's not so much service, just to come back to that question of why I don't like that word. Mm-hmm. The minute somebody says service, there is sort of a dynamic that is at play that sounds a lot like noblesse oblige. I am here to save you. I am here to help you.
Charity. We give charity.
Yeah. And so rather than say that, I really do like the kind of terminology around community engaged learning much better, because that kind of connotes there's something happening that might be a little bit more reciprocal between the community and the student. But there's a wide range of things that can happen. One of the things that I think is sort of differentiates service learning from just straight experiential learning is that there is this exploration of one's own civic identity. Mm-hmm. There's a part of this that is actually trying to elevate for the student a public problem. I'll give an example. I mean, not all student teaching could be considered service learning in my mind, because for some of the students that are doing student teaching, it may be very experiential, but it's really about pre-professional practice. When it becomes service learning in my mind is when they start unpacking here's the system of education as a public thing, and let's talk about it in relation to in relationship to who you are and what your civic identity is. So that's the piece that I think really helps differentiate service learning from just regular experiential learning.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We're talking with Tom Schnabel, who's the executive director of the Haas Center for Public Service, about the difference between service and serving others versus a more reciprocal, community-engaged learning. Have you had people say to you, we don't want all of your Stanford kids coming into our community thinking that they know better, that they're super smart? I mean, have you had that?
Yeah,
you had pushback?
And believe it or not, Denise, I've heard it much more crassly put than what you just
said.
Well,
okay, good, so. Good. I didn't want to say it too crassly. Okay, so yeah, how do you react to that?
The appropriate way is with humility and say, yeah, you're right. We don't want to be coming and using you as a laboratory or sort of coming in here with a messiah complex, nor do we want our students to be doing that. The Haas Center has this set of ethical and effective service principles. One of the main ones is humility. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a lot of students that are at Stanford, undergraduate students, who are here because they were the best of the best. They may have started a nonprofit when they were in middle school, and you know, that kind of thing. One of the things that we have to do.
Sorry, it's why I didn't get in this game.
Right.
Dan, when you're 12, if you don't walk on water and start a nonprofit, that's it. That's it.
But one of the things that we really have to do is actually, you know, ask students, you know, check that at the door when you begin to have these conversations. And that's a powerful thing for students to learn and to be told. You really do need to have humility. I mean, actually, within the first month of my getting here, I went out, I was talking with an education leader in East Palo Alto, and that person put their arm around my shoulder and said to me very nicely, but much crasser than you said it, Tom, would you stop sending your beep students here starting new tutoring programs when we have tutoring programs that have been going on in this community for years and years and years? And my reaction to that is I will try to plug those students in to the things that you're doing in ways that are going to help lift up and build what you've been doing here, and recognizing that may not be the resume builder for the students to say, I founded, I started X, Y, or Z tutoring initiatives.
Yeah, everyone wants to found something. Everyone wants to be the creator. And if it sounds like you're going in and it's already an existing project, it's not as cool, it's not as hip. And you hit a really important point, which is resume building.
Yeah.
And a lot of these people, at least in high school, in order to get into college, see service as a way to differentiate themselves and help them get in to places like Stanford.
Right. You know, it's really interesting because I often think – I hear that a lot and I see that a lot. There's another side of service that I try to elevate a little bit more, and that's sort of the opposite side. If you're on that treadmill of you're seeing service as the way that you're going to get into the next elite school or graduate school or the best job, there's something that we need to do to kind of shake that up a little bit. But the interesting thing is if you flip that on its head, there's actually some research out there that talks about student mental health is actually it's actually enhanced by creating these opportunities for students to give and to serve and to be engaged in the community in ways because they're making meaning. And we know that people who are involved with their peers making meaning actually have better mental health outcomes. So there's this really interesting – they have this sense of belonging to something that's larger than themselves. I'm not saying that this is a panacea for mental health issues, but that's actually a really important thing that I think we don't talk enough about is the ability for this kind of learning and this kind of work to help create that sense of belonging that's going to make them more healthy in the long run.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We will have more with Tom Schnabel and talking about the benefits of service learning, maybe even the mental health benefits of service learning next on SiriusXM Insight 121. We translate the research we know about best practices with school, curriculum, and parenting to teachers, administrators, parents, and youth.
You're listening to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope from the campus of Stanford University.
Welcome back to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We are talking with Tom Schnabel, who is the executive director of the Haas Center for Public Service here at Stanford University. He's also the assistant vice provost for student affairs. And we're talking about service and service learning today.
So I have a question. So it's clear that I don't want to just take the student and throw them out somewhere and say, go serve, do good, and because they'll be knuckleheads. Among other reasons, but so the burden now is on the teacher or the parent how to set this up so it's productive. So you, the service learning courses, there's faculty who want to do this, and you have to train them somehow. Or let's say I'm a parent, how do you help people put something together like this when they haven't had much experience?
Well, I can speak to it mostly from the Stanford's perspective, and a lot of schools do this a little differently. But I'm aware that there's a growing infrastructure even at the K-12, mostly in high schools where they've got folks that do this. But at Stanford, a few years back, and this is with some support from the dean of the Graduate School of Education, where we've hired a cadre of people. We call them directors of community engaged learning. And they basically work directly with community partners and with the faculty who are teaching these courses to kind of code switch between help people think about, you've got this course, you've got these learning objectives. What's going on in the community that we could potentially connect that with? And so they're kind of a matchmaker, but they're also kind of skilled at that civic reflection piece. So they're going to be asking the questions about the civic identity development and drawing out some of the public purposes of this. And I'm pretty sure that almost at any high school, they're going to have people, maybe I'm wrong, but there's people like that who would be at least in the community service realm there to help people figure out what's going on in the community. I can also tell you that there is a cottage industry of sort of things online where you can go to volunteermatch.org where there's
– no kidding.
Oh, yeah.
I love that idea. That is better than a dating app because you could actually meet your partner when you're serving for the United Way, and it would be someone who shares your values. I think this is the new next thing.
Wow, that was such a creative leap.
Okay, well, I got excited.
Swiping left.
I totally got excited about that. Okay, sorry. But let's talk about another hidden benefit that I think you brought up, which is, first of all, I wish that in high schools there were more of these people like you and people who really know what they're doing. Because I think for a lot of high school students, it is literally just check off the box and you have to get a signature. And there's not that reflection piece.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, if you were going to wave a magic wand and say, let's make community engagement at high school way better, would that be one of the main things that you're adding to it? Is they all have to, I don't know, write an essay? Kids across the country are going to kill me right now, but you know.
Yeah, well, you mentioned at one point that at Stanford, students actually can get a transcript notation. And we give them that transcript notation not because they put in 20, 30, 40 hours. We give them the transcript notation because they write a synthesis essay that basically articulates, here's what I've learned about the ethics and the ethical conundrums in service and building off of our principles of ethical and effective service. They write to that, whether they're doing this because they took 12 units of these cardinal courses or they went on a service internship. That's part of the reflection, but yes, to answer your question, if I could do one thing, around these service requirements, I would actually strip away the hourly sort of thing on there and really focus on having some set of either competencies or some reflection essay that is asking them to really focus on what were the ethical challenges that you faced in doing service. We asked that question. I'm also a resident fellow at one of the dorms on campus that happens to be the public service theme dorm. In our entrance essay, we ask students to write about an ethical dilemma that they've encountered through service while they've engaged in service. I'm actually quite surprised by how often students have a challenge coming up with that, which really tells me that they're not doing service the way I want them to. They're stocking cans, they're licking stamps. They're not really faced with sort of, hey, this is a challenge that I need to kind of internalize and think about.
This is Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. We're talking with Tom Schnabel, who's the executive director of the Haas Center for Public Service, on the value of doing service and reflecting on sort of the ethical challenges of doing service. When you say it like that, it makes me think, gosh, if every graduate of every high school in the United States could do service really well, let's talk about the benefits. It sounds like, one, you know, putting yourself, seeing yourself helping others, that it's not all about you, I think is a really important lesson for high school kids. But let's go back to where you talked about the mental health, right? That's a huge, huge issue in the U.S. right now, well, across the globe. What is it about doing service that allows that kid to be healthier?
Well, as I said before, it's part of it is just having a sense of purpose and a sense of meaning. And thinking of oneself as something, a part of a bigger thing than just I'm an individual. The second piece of that is, rarely do you do service by yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're in some kind of a group. You're having some opportunity to connect with other people. So it's this sense of peer. You're engaging with your peers. And so I think those are the kind of primary things around that you're engaging with other people, you're learning about a community, you're doing something that's hopefully bringing meaning and purpose into your life. And I think those are really important things. There, I mentioned research. The study that I'm thinking about is Robert Reason at Iowa State University looked at two tools. One is a sort of marker or an indicator of how much a school is engaged in cultivating civic engagement and civic responsibility. The other one is a mental health tool that allows them to sort of rate the population of students as either flourishing or floundering. And he looked at this and compared these two tools and saw a direct correlation between the schools that were actually really high on the civic engagement markers and the schools that had really positive mental health. And what's interesting about that, it wasn't just the kids that were involved in civic engagement. It was actually across the entire institution.
So it may not be a panacea, but it sure sounds like it's a good thing. Not checking off the boxes and doing the hours to get into Stanford or to distinguish yourself or resume build. But if you do it right, sounds like this can really be a good thing.
Empathy, humility, mental health, the belief that you can make a difference, citizenship. It's a good mix of stuff.
I think we got to make every kid do it.
Really?
Forced service, but the good kind of service.
Wow.
I'm going on record right now.
Wow.
Thank you so much for being here, Tom. And thank you for listening to Schools In with Dan Schwartz and Denise Pope. If you missed any of this episode, listen anytime on demand with the SiriusXM app or on SoundCloud.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.